most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we're coming to you live from Studio City, California. And you can catch our show every Sunday from 5 to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, basically our show is about informative entertainment, and we try to do it for you in a really fun, upbeat improv style, and we provide you with tips and advice and resource information on how to pursue a career in show business. And we also have guests that work in various professions of the entertainment industry. So that means that we're definitely going to have someone from a career that you're interested in, hearing about, knowing about, anything that you that has to do basically with entertainment. We're going to have a guest on here that's going to tell you about it. And if you want to be on the show, if you're in the entertainment industry or you want to know who's going to be on the show in the future, you can visit our website, which is questionreality.us, not .com, questionreality.us, or you can see us directly on the LA Talk Radio website. That would be latalkradio.com, and you would just click on the schedule one, and you would see our show Sunday, 5 o'clock is the time slot. So if you want to check out any of our past guests, read their bios, listen or download any of the shows, you can do that right on the LA Talk Radio website. You would click on the Schedule 1 link that's at the top of the LA Talk Radio website, and that'll take you to our archive section, and we have all the shows from the inception up until the current show, and you can read a little bit about their bio. There's websites on there where you can read more information about the guests. So basically, we got you hooked up. We got you connected to everybody on the show. You're not going to miss anything. And now I want to tell you, if you have any questions about any of the guests or you want to follow up on it, you can email me directly. And that would be info@questionreality.us. info@questionreality.us. And since this is a live show, we would love for you to call in and ask questions or provide comments on the show. You can talk to our guests live at any time. We do ask that you preferably call in between 5:20 and 5:30 just to give the guests time to talk about themselves and just kind of mentally and physically prepare for the swarming in of guests, hopefully. So when you call in, we take your calls directly. You don't go through a screening process. You will talk directly to me, and you'll be patched through to the guests. So the call-in number is right in front of you if you're listening to us from the website, but just in case, it's area code 323-203-0815. Now, today we have a fantastic guest for you. I'm going to just tell you a little bit about her, a little brief bio. Her name is Linda J. Alexander, and she grew up with the 70s entertainment. She grew up in the 70s, some of my favorite years. Just a child, but I still remember how to do the hustle. And after she did the hustle and she watched Mod Squad and listened to all the bubblegum music on her Duster's radio, she basically interviewed all those entertainers who engaged her imagination. And she became so enamored of Hollywood's golden era when romance was romance and stories had plots and basically politics worked as they still do today. So she now entertains and she enlightens by writing. And the most recent of 5 published books is called Reluctant Witness, Robert Taylor, Hollywood, and Communism. And if you don't know who Robert Taylor was, he was an actor from the 40s to 69, but he grew up in a small town in Nebraska, and then he rose to the heights of movie stardom, and then he died in 1969. But Robert Taylor, along with being a famous movie actor, one of his most defining moments was that he appeared in 1947. He was subpoenaed with the House Un-American Activities Committee in response to, you know, the fear of communism in the United States. So today, basically, he's incorrectly recalled as one who named names. So Linda's book tells the truth about Robert Taylor's life and that political circus, which, of course, is his words. And Linda has published two other nonfiction books and two novels of a more dark, sexy intrigue. So she doesn't just write about politics. She writes about sexy stuff. So her next bio is due out in 2010, and that is called A Maverick Life. And that's the Jack Kelly story. See, it'll be the bio of he was a 50s film star, Jack Kelly. So you can definitely check all of the information about Linda Alexander out on her website. Her website is lindajalexander.net. And then we'll be saying that throughout the show. But basically, we are going to talk today to Linda, but keep in mind, she's going to speak. If you want to meet Linda, you can meet her. She's coming to California. She's going to speak to the Hollywood Congress of Republicans on October the 7th. And basically, her talk will be about Reluctant Witness, Robert Taylor, Hollywood and Communism, blacklisting then and now shows. She's going to do comparisons between the 1940s politics and politics of today, and how blacklisting was seen as an industry, entertainment industry, rather, travesty then, but today it's accepted reality, and how Robert Taylor's life lesson could pave the way for a more equitable Hollywood in America, you know, finally. So she will be here Wednesday, October 7th, this week, at the Acapulco restaurant, and she'll be at 3113 West Olive Avenue in Burbank, and you can check in at 6 p.m. There's a meeting. Meals start at 6:30, and you can go to her website for all of the details. But I'm just so excited to get started talking to her. Let's just get her on the line, because I'll just talk the whole hour. So welcome, Linda Alexander. I hope I didn't talk too much and tell everything, and we're ready to close the show. Do you have anything else to contribute?
Oh, thank you so much, Priscilla. It was nice talking to you.
Of course, of course. Well, it was nice listening to me talk, at least, right?
No, you did an excellent job. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, when I was approached to have you on the show, I thought, oh my God, it's a godsend, because this is a very strong topic with me, because people, a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people, when they hear the word blacklisting, or you're going to be blacklisted, or even in a joking sense, their mind automatically goes back to, you know, Eugene McCarthy, and they think, oh, that only happened back in the day. That only happened. That only is referenced as a kind of a joke back in the day with the McCarthyism. People don't realize that blacklisting goes on today. And two of the things that I really, really, really want people to know and to be aware of is examples of that happen today is Proposition 8. Proposition 8, do you remember, did you follow that following the passage of California's Proposition 8 when the opponents obtained donation list of those who had supported the ballot measure by contributing to the Yes on 8 campaign, and they published the list, and they organized an activism group and began calling for boycotts of the places of work of the supporters to force the firing or the resignation of employees? Do you remember that? Perfect example of blacklisting today. Am I right?
Yeah, I do recall it. You know, not being directly in California, it's a different concept. But it was all over the news. So, and
yeah,
you're
that's
right. You know, that's a format. Excuse me, that is a format of it.
So
when you say the word blacklisting, people automatically say McCarthy. But
exactly. The
really intriguing thing for me is that McCarthy did not start this.
Mm.
McCarthy was in the 50s,
right?
And McCarthy was not part of the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
It started literally back in the 30s.
Mm.
And then, of course, by 1947, there was so much furor going on about potential communism. And to be fair, there was a threat of communism in the United States at that time. If you
mm-hmm.
talk to anybody who's old enough to know better, they will at least say that, yes, the possibility was occurring. And that's when 47, and actually Hollywood and Robert Taylor, John Wayne, Ronald Reagan, Gary Cooper, any of those all of those people in 1947 were part of the initial insanity, if you will, as it began. And it's kind of rolled downhill ever since.
Now, do you feel that, because as we know, history repeats itself in so many ways every day, do you think that the whole McCarthyism was just the time that everything was brought to light, and that blacklisting, for a lack of a non-existent term prior to that, had been going on since the beginning of time, and we can see examples of that throughout history?
Something like that may have been occurring prior to that, but like I said, the original quote-unquote blacklist was directly after 1947, after the HUAC meetings. That's when the Hollywood 10 came about, and that's, those were the 10 people, it was originally 13, I believe, but those were the 10 people who refused to speak, and they were contempt of court. And supposedly they were blacklisted, and they, not supposedly, they were blacklisted. A lot of them lost work. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of them had serious issues for many, many years within Hollywood.
Right. And they had to write under pseudonyms, change their names.
And, you know, and of course, then in the 50s, McCarthy's name came into the picture. And McCarthy is probably the most, right or wrong, depending on your point of view, and probably mostly right, vilified name in the issue. On the second hand, Robert Taylor's name is probably the second most vilified name.
Now, why did you choose to write about, Linda, why did you choose to write about Robert, Robert Taylor, as opposed to Eugene McCarthy? What was your reasoning for that?
Well, McCarthy, like I said, McCarthy didn't even exist in this game in 1947. McCarthy wasn't part of the picture. McCarthy's name only became attached to this because, you know, he took what happened in the 40s and ran with it in the 50s. Beyond that, I started to write about Robert Taylor simply because I remember the 20 Mule Team Borax running across the TV screen when I was a little kid, and he was on Death Valley Days. And he stuck in my head, and I wasn't raised with my father, and Robert Taylor, in my mind, always reminded me of my father. So, you know, I think there's probably some sort of psychobabble thing in there. but, you know, I started to, as I got older, I started to read about him and research him, and I just, you know, I tried to write about him. I couldn't get things published on him. And I even had a very big agent in New York City, who's still a big agent in New York City, who signed me on for a contract because he was happy with the idea of this book. And after a year, he came back to me and said, I can't sell it. He's too dead. And
he's too dead. He's too dead. Wow, maybe he thought he was living.
It's politics, you know, and that's what it all boiled down to. And so it was just because the publishing industry is very liberal, and the Hollywood is quite liberal. I mean, you know, fact is fact. So the idea of giving a straightforward opinion of Robert Taylor apparently just didn't sit well. So
it didn't sit well because it wasn't commercial enough. Are you saying it's not commercial enough to catch buzz as far as the terms of Hollywood go? It didn't resonate well, or what do you mean that it didn't catch on well?
Robert Taylor was extraordinarily conservative. Robert Taylor today is considered to be the Fink of the Hollywood blacklist. That's why I say he's probably the second most vilified name. So anybody who was going to put out a book that was a straightforward accounting of Robert Taylor, not resonating that he was, you know, this horrible person. His name was removed from a building in the Lorimar studio lot in the 80s by some screenwriters who decided he was a horrible influence and they couldn't possibly go to work in a building named after Robert Taylor. So my point is that, you know, Taylor was far too conservative for a much more liberal Hollywood, and they considered Taylor to be not a good man.
Just because he so-called testified and named names? I mean, is that why?
Well, and he didn't, Jack. I mean, and anybody, all you'd have to do is give a reading of the testimony that he gave to see that he, you know, he was asked, do you know who anybody who's a communist in Hollywood? Basically, he said, no, I don't. Do you know anyone who disrupted Screen Actors Guild's meetings? And he said, well, yes, I know some people who disrupted Screen Actors Guild's meetings. Now, keep in mind that disrupting a meeting was a technical term used by the Communist Party to stop active business from occurring. So he said, yes, I know people who disrupted. So who are these people? So then he named who these people were who actively disrupted the meetings. So for this, and then they said, well, do you know any writers? Well, he named Lester Cole, but Lester Cole was already known to be a communist. I mean, everybody knew it at that point in time. And he said, I don't actually know this. I simply have heard this. So the fact that he was on tape saying these things, he has become a poster boy for causing the blacklist, essentially, or at least, you know, making it much worse than what it already was.
So for people that are not well-versed in data from the trials, but from the actual gathering, the McCarthy gatherings, were there not other people that went on to have successful careers and who named names or casually said a name, and they were not treated like Robert Taylor was?
Yes, there were. There were many people who named Ronald Reagan, you know, for certain. But
right.
the difference was, is that Robert Taylor was the only one on camera intentionally. Robert Taylor's appearance was announced to the press prior to him being there. His was the only appearance announced to the press. So my contention is that he was reverse blacklisted.
I see.
They needed a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
So the studio announced to the press that the Robert Taylor was going to be on the stand on this date at this time.
Hmm.
And it was
what studio was that? What studio are you speaking of?
MGM.
Ah.
Metro.
Did he have a contract with them at the time and they announced
Robert
that?
Robert Taylor is the longest running contract actor in the history of film. That
wow.
will never be taken away from him.
Mm.
He actually started in the 1930s with MGM.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically turned out the lights with him driving out of the studio.
Mm. Now, can you give us an overview of House of Un-American Activity Committee history? Like you say, how blacklisting didn't start with Eugene McCarthy. Was there actually a person, did you say this earlier, and I can't remember what it was there a person who actually started this? I mean, who was the one that said, oh, you know, hey, let's find out who everybody is that's associated with communism? Was that a government agency? I imagine it was. And if so, do you know what part of the government started that? Or why don't you give us an overview of that?
The House of Representatives started it. A gentleman by the name of Martin Dies was the chairman,
mm-hmm.
and that was essentially the mid-1930s. And, of course, you know, this was World War II, just thereafter, just around the end. And they were, just, you know, we were supposed to be playing nice with Russia because at this point in time, Russia was considered to be one of our allies, yet people weren't really sure of it. And there was a group in the House that felt that it needed to be investigated. And, of course, Hollywood is essentially America's royalty. It still is, you know. And so what better way was there to get a message of national import, if you will, out to the country? And we did it through our movies. We still do it through our movies and our television now. But, you know, at that point, it was our movies. There was actually an Office of War Information, the United States government. And you couldn't put a movie out through the studio system without it following a strict set of guidelines, which was put out by the Office of War Information. So that was the general background. And then when the House got into this furor, and it started interviewing some of these major actors behind the scenes and building their case. And these actors were told that what they were telling the committee was in total secret. You know, it was just being used as background. Well, Robert Taylor, in particular, his information was all over the press within days because there were leaks going on. And so it just snowballed. He wrote a letter to the committee just prior to them putting him on the stand, begging them not to do it. He said, "You already know everything I'm going to tell you. You have it in your records," which they did. They already knew who the communists were. They were card-carrying communists, if you will. But they put him on anyway because they were looking for a show. They were looking to make the public feel as if they were doing their job. And ultimately, that's what started it all. And then, of course, the Hollywood 10 came out of all this, and the Hollywood 10 were blacklisted, and that brought on more activity into the early 50s. And then McCarthy came into the picture, and that's when it really gained furor. And America was changing in its environment at that point. We were getting farther away from the end of World War II. And people were beginning to say, "Hey, this isn't fair, this blacklisting thing." So that's when, you know, back and forth and everything started to really get kind of very public. And that's why McCarthy's name ends up being the poster name, if you will, for blacklisting.
Now, for people who don't know who the Hollywood 10 were, do you off the top of your head know the names of the Hollywood 10? Do you?
Well, I don't have the list of all the 10 of them. There was an Alva Bessie, you know, Dimitrik. I never pronounce his name correctly, but they were well known Hollywood writers of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
were they completely? I mean, I know that a lot of them did go on to continue to be successful because, they were writing under pseudonyms, and they were still getting work. I mean, can you name some people that were actually devastated to the point where they were really hurt so bad from being listed as the Hollywood 10? I mean, what's the greatest story of suffering that you can think of that came out of this McCarthyism thing, this un-American House of Un-American Activities Committee that
went
on?
The Hollywood 10, obviously, that was prior to McCarthy. And these 10 gentlemen, Biberman, Dimitrik, Alva Bessie, there was a number of the names, and unfortunately, I don't have those guys' names right in front of me,
right?
Because I've always focused on Taylor. But there were unfortunate stories and tragic stories that came out of that. You know, they lost their jobs, they lost their livelihoods. Some of them wrote under pseudonyms. Some of them never got credit for what they did. Some of them got so despondent that I believe. Within the general aspect of all this happening, there may have been some suicides involved. It was a horrible, horrible time.
Mm-hmm.
But to pin that entire issue on one man who was, you know, Robert Taylor, who really was not directly responsible for any of this. He wasn't even indirectly responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reverse blacklisting. His life changed after that. He was getting into his 40s and things were changing, but still his work changed, his livelihood changed. He got different sorts of roles than he would have gotten prior to that.
Yeah, because I do know that he did continue to work on, even into the year that he died in 1969, I know he did work continuously. I guess what you're saying is that he didn't get the A-list parts that he could have gotten had this not happened. But
continued to work.
Yeah,
it was a different type of work. And plus,
right.
You know, people will say, and they will be true, that, you know, like I said, he was quote-unquote getting older. He was 40-ish.
Mm-hmm.
There were the young pups coming up in Hollywood, which happens all the time, and the newer, better roles were going to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
and TV was on the horizon, and you know, and just it was like a perfect storm almost. You know, everything was coming together at one time, which historically is not unusual.
I do, by the way, I pulled up the Hollywood 10 just because I was curious to see that. And it looks like, I don't know why this is, but it looks like the Hollywood 10, with the exception of one person, that every one of these people were screenwriters. We've got Alva Bessie, screenwriter. We've got Herbert Biberman, screenwriter and director, Lester Cole, screenwriter, Edward Dimitrik, director, Ring Lardner, screenwriter, John Howard Lawson, screenwriter, Albert Maltz, screenwriter, Samuel Ornitz, screenwriter, Adrian Scott, producer and screenwriter, and Dalton Trumbo, screenwriter. And I'm like, why did they list these people, the Hollywood 10? Is it a coincidence that these are all screenwriters, with the exception of Edward Dimitrik? I mean, even it listed under others, they've got a guy named Hans Eisler, a composer, but then again, Bernard Gordon, screenwriter, Joan Scott, screenwriter, and the list goes on and on and on. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's like a pattern here. Did they specifically pick out screenwriters because they were not as powerful as the actors? Because
they picked out screenwriters because screenwriters were the ones, quote unquote, bringing the message to the Hollywood, to the people.
Mm.
They were writing material. They were, quote, they were, and this is not my word, this is, you know, the message. They were putting the message into the minds of the people by the stories they were writing.
Oh.
For imparting communistic philosophies, at least this is what the committee felt, into the minds of the people. You know, the actors didn't necessarily do this, although the actors were also considered culpable if they were part of the party, and they did have their obvious influence. And there were many actors at the very beginning that were listed as possible communists, but they were. A lot of them were slowly, you know, notched off. The writers had the most play in all that because of the fact that they could bring you the message.
Now, there were some people that were also on a list called Red Channels, the Red Channels list. What exactly is the Red Channels list?
That came about prior to 47. Like I said, you know, this... You know, it's historically things like this, they have to churn, they have to grow. And as I said, in the mid to late 30s, we were World War II-ing and finishing up World War II, and we were, in a way, there is a very close, there's a similarity to today in the sense that, you know, if some of us are very, very... conservative, and some of us are very, very liberal, and mm-hmm. some of us are like, you know, right in the middle. And there are a lot of changes, a lot of new ideas coming about, and those of us who aren't certain of that are on one side of the fence, and those of us who want to, you know, impart that change are on the other side of the fence. Well, the atmosphere was the same then, and the Red Channels was a Communist Party of the United States of America. There, and it was an actual party. It's called CPUSA. And they had magazines, newspapers, and so forth, Red Channels. They had lists that came out of certain government and Hollywood.
Yeah. So it was
places.
The report, basically the report of the communist influence in radio and television, right?
Right, and they were egging on the argument, if you will.
I thought they were weren't they anti-communist? It was a anti-communist track,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, and that's when, you know, the HUAC was anti-communist. Robert Taylor was anti-communist. John Wayne, you know, Ronald Reagan, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan and Robert Taylor were best friends.
So the red list, in essence, was it the good list? Like...
Well,
it's
it was
the
list
like...
of who was considered red. It was the list of who was considered communist.
Hmm.
And, you know, that egged on the list of who they would investigate through the House Un-American Activities Committee and who was going to be investigated by the government. You know, like I said, they had built up their ammunition long before 1947 and the actual hearings came about. That's why Robert Taylor told them, you know, you already know all this. You already know who is a communist. You have already done the research. And they did. They already knew. They used the hearings as a public display of what they knew.
Mm. And they just still decided that, well, Robert Taylor was going to be the scapegoat, I guess, right?
Well, you know, Robert Taylor was at that point in time, he was at the height of his career. He was a very, in 1947, he was a very well-known, very handsome, obviously. You know, all you have to do is look at a picture and see that. Women went gaga over him. People listened to him because he was, you know, I don't want to say he was the George Clooney of his time. Obviously, the politics were totally different. But the concept is that he was that popular.
So I'm just wondering, but what about Errol Flynn? What about Clark Gable? What about, you know, there were so many other actors.
Clark Gable was in the midst of this, too. Clark Gable was in the same organization as Robert Taylor. But I think, I don't quote me on this because I don't know Errol Flynn, but I think Errol Flynn was on the opposite side of the fence. But Robert Taylor was part of the Motion Picture Alliance for the Preservation of American Ideals. That's a mouthful. And as was Reagan, as was John Wayne. So there was a crux of people who were called in ahead of the hearings. And that's what I said earlier, that they were said, you know, they were asked questions, quote unquote, in confidence. Mm-hmm. And Taylor was one of them. And yet, in confidence really meant nothing because ultimately that was splashed all over the newspapers. But, you know, these guys, you know, and if you were to go read the transcripts of all the 1947 HUAC hearings, you'd see the names of Ronald Reagan, you'd see Clark Gable, you'd see Ronald Reagan, you'd see Gary Cooper, Ayn Rand, you know, a whole bunch of them. It just so happens that some of them got more, they were pushed more into the front than others.
Yeah, see, I would think that the people that were the more popular stars would, they'd really like it, like today. What do we focus on? All of the Inquirer and the Star and the paparazzi, they go after the top stars.
Well, that's right. So Robert Taylor was one of the top stars. Mm-hmm. He was your George Clooney of the day. He was your Brad Pitt of the day. Mm. He really was.
Really?
You know, you couldn't get a lot more well-known, popular. Women went absolutely nuts over this man. That's why they publicized his appearance ahead of time. They had to put up roadblocks because so many women and men and kids showed up at this appearance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were swooning, screaming. They wanted a show. And by saying Robert Taylor's going to be here on this particular day at this particular time, they got a show. You know, he was that popular.
Do you think that, okay, so not to minimize, of course, his popularity, but if you asked some teenagers, maybe 18-year-old, that fairly well-educated, and you gave a list, and you said, okay, do you know who, you know, Clark Gable, Ronald Reagan, this person, and then you put Robert Taylor in with it. I don't know that if people would necessarily remember who Robert Taylor was, but they would know who some of the other names were. Do you think do you think that that's because of what happened at the HUVAC? You think that's it? Because honestly, I mean, I've heard of Robert Taylor. Not in my teens, of course. I've heard of Robert Taylor, and the only reason I have heard of Robert Taylor is because when I was little, there was a boy who had a big crush on me, and his name was Robert Taylor. And my mother's like, "Oh my God, Robert Taylor was a great actor, and he was gorgeous," and da-da. But other than that, honestly, I'm not as familiar, and I'm in the entertainment business, I'm not as familiar with his work as, say, Clark Gable. I couldn't name, without looking it up, five of his films. Whereas if you go, like, you know, Ronald Reagan or Clark Gable or Errol Flynn, I can name, like, five, maybe even ten. Do you think that because of that happening to him, that really is a reason why we really don't hear a lot and know him as one of the great, 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 great ongoing stars because of that happening?
I 100% believe that that is why. You know, that's like I said. That's like I said earlier when I tried to get this book published. I went through many, many well-known channels, and like as I mentioned, you know, a really well-known agent. And if that guy could not get a book on Robert Taylor published, no one was going to get a book on Robert Taylor published through traditional channels.
Yeah, it's weird because if he was that popular, my God, you know, and there's like hardly anything on him.
Well, and that's, and if you read, you know, if you read the internet, you're going to hear almost completely negative things.
Nothing,
on him.
Right.
Unless you simply read the straight bio. You know, he was born in 1911, Philly, Nebraska, yada, yada, yada. So when you hear that, but if you hear any commentary on Robert Taylor, you are going to mostly hear either that he was beautiful or that he had lousy politics. I fully contend that the reason you don't know Robert Taylor's name, I mean, I'll say this, I say this all the time. I say it in any speech I ever give. I can name you Ronald Reagan. Everybody, of course, knows who Reagan is for many reasons. But I can say Clark Gable, I can say John Wayne, I can say Gary Cooper even. And they all go, oh, yeah, I know who that was.
Right.
And if I say Robert Taylor, I get nothing but a blank stare.
That's so weird because I was telling people about you coming on the show, and I said, oh, I'm so excited, you know, she'll be talking about Robert Taylor. And a lot of people who are not in their teens, who are in their 20s and 30s, said, who is that? And I'm like,
That's the thing. If you take a slice of Americana, if you will, between, say, 25 and 40, somewhere in there, you're going to get that majorly for whatever reason. If you take the people who are 50 to over, let's say 50 to 60, you usually get some sort of recognition, if only because of his TV days. 60 and over, most of them know who he was because they saw him in action. But surprisingly enough, I'm finding more and more young people between their mid-20s to, say, 30 who know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of those are progressive liberals, and they're not going to have a whole lot of good to say about him because they've grown up on only what they've heard.
Mm-hmm. Now, basically, in an industry that's seen, you know, as a bastion for liberalism, conservatives are still blacklisted. I don't know, for some reason, conservatives are always picked on. Do you feel that? Why don't you tell me how you feel that it's related today? I cited one example earlier about Proposition 8 and how people got hold of that list and the people were blacklisted. They lost their jobs. There were so many things done to them just from the Proposition 8 thing, which is a modern day thing. What things can you comparatively say is happening that, you know, people are still getting blacklisted, sort of, that is related with the conservative.
I'm told on a regular basis by people who are working in Hollywood right now that they do not tell people that they are conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ones that have, and we're not talking Arnold Schwarzenegger, and we're not talking Charlton Heston. Your real big names can abide it and get through it because they are big names. You know, their chances are they're not going to get nailed. But your middle-of-the-road actors and actresses and producers and directors and writers, what few writers there may be in this area, are, if they mention that they're conservative, I'm told they actually have lost work based
on
that.
Really?
They don't come out and say, I voted for George Bush, or I have a conservative belief, or, you know, I believe whatever it is. They don't mention that. And it's, you know, even if you go on Facebook or if you go on any social networking, and you pop out with any sort of comment on Hollywood and a liberal belief, well, you'll get all sorts of rah-rahs. But if you pop up with Hollywood and something conservative, you either get lambasted or you get silence, complete silence. And I have to believe that this is true because I've been told it more and more and more by many people in the industry. And 12 plus years ago, there were articles out. I've pulled many of them. on the same thing happening. You know, young professionals, middle-aged professionals who just go through Hollywood doing their jobs and getting work as long as they don't say, I'm communist or, I'm conservative, and or what they actually believe in.
Don't you find irony in that? Because an industry that went through what it went through with they went through that. That's something they went through, and the audacity. Are you saying, you know, the audacity of them to actually, well, our air quote blacklist conservatives? Right, you know, isn't that kind of
whether it's audacity or not? It's just I. That's my whole point. And that's what has constantly fueled me, is that, you know, if it was wrong back in the 40s for Robert Taylor to quote-unquote name names, mm-hmm. which, like I said, really isn't the case, but if that were true and that was wrong then, why is it okay now for someone who would be considered the Robert Taylor of today, if you will, to lose work because he's conservative?
Wow.
There's got to be a middle ground in here somewhere. We have to stop fighting and just get somewhere where we don't lose our livelihoods. I mean, you know, talk to Alva Bessie's son, Dan, to find out what went on with his father, Alva, back then.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you do that today to anyone? You know, it's
so it's like so what you're saying is if you're not a liberal in the entertainment business, you're going to get blacklisted.
Sure, you're not going to work. You know?
If you're a conservative, you're out. Oh, God, I did not know that. I actually, you know, I work in the entertainment business, and I never even realized that. You know, I meet a lot of people who I would say is conservative, and they're in the entertainment industry. They're the people that are behind the scenes, the accountants, the, you know, the people who are doing the administrative stuff, and they're still working. And I mean, to meet them, I've never said, hey, are you a conservative? But you can always kind of tell people that are the liberals and the conservatives.
And they're not going to talk to you about
Right. Exactly. And you kind of know, but it's not like they're going around saying, you know, with a little flag.
The other side of that fence is the liberals will talk to you all day long about their politics.
Right.
So and supposedly there is, you know, if a conservative in Hollywood is asked directly about their politics, if they say something to the effect of, I don't discuss my political beliefs, well, then automatically that person is, there's a conservative right there.
Yeah.
Because they won't tell you. They won't talk to you.
Yeah, conservatives used to be in. Now they're out. Oh, my God. Well, I'm not saying sure, but
in Hollywood and publishing, it's not a brand of, it's not a badge of courage, so to speak. You know,
I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that and investigate that further on my own, because I tell you, I know a lot of people that I know are conservatives, and they're the behind-the-scenes people. They're the people that make it happen. They're the people that get it done. And, you know, liberal people, you know, I being one of them, they're more emotional. They're more reactive. And without the conservative people, the reactive people, the liberal people, we get a little crazy. You know, we're a little too emotional. We don't always, you know, be able to hold the things down, hold the fort down. I think the conservative people, you know, they're kind of, they get things done. So, you know, they both have their places in the world, the conservatives and the liberal.
Definitely.
They both do their thing. They both do them great. We just have to live together and just get along. It's just the wipe the politics out and just get the job done. Is basically the way I feel. So you know what? It's almost time. We're going to have to wrap up. It's a 5:46, and we have to wrap up at 5:50. But I wanted to know if there was anything left that you wanted to talk about. I know you got this big thing coming up on Wednesday. Why don't you tell us about that?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I didn't know if you could hear me or not.
I didn't even know you were on the line. I'm sorry. Yeah. Nobody told me you were on the line. fine.
And then I'm glad I said something. This is Debbie Boss, and I've been listening to the show, and I've been enjoying it. And I know you're about to go off the air, but I had a question and a comment. Could I get it in time?
Oh, hurry up, because it's 5:47,
yes,
honey.
Hi, this is the deal. When you guys were, number one, I love Robert Taylor. I know who the heck he is. He had the most sexiest bedroom eyes I've ever seen. Okay. With that being said, Linda, this is my question real quickly. I mean, you guys were talking about the reason that maybe he had so much media drawn towards him when he was subpoenaed to go before the committee. A lot of it was maybe based on his appearance and so forth and his stardom at that time. But I kind of wonder if it wasn't a strategy as well by the members behind the committee, because they already knew that his views were very ultra-conservative, that he was already vocal on communism, so therefore he would make a good person to put in front of the public as far as voicing their opinions and maybe reinforcing their goals to fight communism.
That's exactly right. I mean, that is, if you do, you know, look at the research and you look at the fact that Taylor begged them not to do what they did as far as putting in front of the committee, and you check it all out, you look at how that committee came to pass and how much of a Hollywood production that hearing was. That is my contention. Robert Taylor was intentionally used. They needed a scapegoat. They needed somebody to become the face of the thing to take the heat off the studios. The studio system was already having problems in the late 40s. So the government, my contention is, and if, like I said, you read everything, you could see that, is that the government was basically saying, you play with us, we need to work this out, it's in the best interest of the country. And that's how the House Un-American Activities Committee hearings basically came to pass, and Robert Taylor was the beauty, you know, he was the star. He really was the star of those hearings in that context.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Thank you for calling in. I'm so
thanks,
sorry.
That
I'm sorry I didn't know you were on the line. That's my fault. But we have to wrap it up, and I want you to get, Linda, I want you to get anything in that you need to get in, because we got to go in 1 minute. Why don't you tell us real quick in 1 minute what you're doing on Wednesday?
I'm speaking in front of the House. I mean, excuse me, in front of the House. Yeah, Linda.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, wouldn't that be interesting? No, in front of the Hollywood
You're going to be at the Acapulco Restaurant, 3113 West
Hollywood Congress of Republicans. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And it's a meeting, and if you're a friendly sort, but I don't care what your politics are, if you just want to come in here, the pros and cons of trying to, as our dear Rodney King said, can't we just all get along? And,
woo!
You know, the whole story.
Why can't we be friends? We be friends? Thank you, Linda, so much for being on the show. God, it was such an honor and a pleasure to meet
Thank you
on
you,
the show.
Priscilla.
Thank you. I hope that anytime you want to come back, if you want to promote your other book, you give me a call, and we'd be loving to have you back. Love it, love it, love it. And I hope you have a lot of people that come to your thing on this Wednesday, October 7th at Acapulco Restaurant. Got great food over there. Thank you, Miss Linda, and thank you, everybody who listened. Next week we have Gwen Cannon, writer and authoress of a hot new book. You got to check her out. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye.
Bye. Thanks.
The Horror Channel is your home for the best in horror entertainment, news, culture, lifestyle, and best of all, frights. We are available on Verizon Fios Cable Television. Go to Channel 900, free on demand, and select Pop Culture. Scroll down and you'll find The Horror Channel. So be sure to visit horrorchannel.com for all of our latest programming.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.